Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Thank you for joining us in this latest edition of the OIES podcast series. My name is Anouk Honoré. I'm a senior research fellow at the OIES, and I was the managing editor of the Oxford Energy Forum, which focuses on the decarbonization of heat in the European building sector. This journal was published by the Institute in February 2023. We have recorded three podcasts in which some of the authors discuss different aspects of this complex but fascinating topic: policy, practical challenges, and the importance of local specificities. We hope you enjoy listening to them.
In this podcast, we discuss the role of policy in the decarbonisation of heat in the European building sector. In this first conversation, I'm talking to Thomas Novak, who's Secretary General at the European Heat Pump Association, EHPA, who wrote the chapter Decarbonising Heat Demand in Europe Needs All Hands on Deck Approach in the recent Oxford Energy Forum. Thomas, great to have you here. Now, heat pump sales have soared in the recent years, but in your article, you argue that we're still way off from where we need to be. Now, why is that?
Thank you for inviting me on this podcast. In the first instance, David, it is because we are still looking at about 75% of fossil fuels used in heating. So despite 15 years of progress and despite heat pumps being a recognized technology in all areas of policy, we still have a lot of work to do. We still have to convert pretty much the whole market. We are doing this on a very solid base now. The heat pump market shares have increased last year even. So over the 34% I'm mentioning in the article, we now have the data for 2022, and we can say it was an outstanding year with plus 38%, more than 3 million heat pumps sold, market share of around 30% in annual sales. That's always a bit tricky because we don't know the exact number of boiler sales, and we don't know how many units are used for heating as air conditioning units. And probably around 15% of the stock is provided with heat pumps. But that shows you the order of magnitude with which we have to advance, and we do not have too much time anymore, so we have to accelerate. On the other hand, I made a scenario to model what increase rates would be necessary to reach the REPowerEU targets. And then I thought that the double-digit growth for the rest of this decade, in a way exponential growth, would be enough. These plus 38% last year have accelerated and catapulted actually sales quite far forward, so that now, in order to reach the REPowerEU targets, we would need close to 10% growth only, which means also if we grow faster, we would actually accelerate further and we could achieve the decarbonization of heat earlier than we think. Because fundamentally, I do think that decarbonized heat is not a technically hard problem. We have all the solutions available. We know how to do that. Now we need to move from policy and from political targets to action on the ground.
Okay, now you say that you are asking for technology clarity instead of technology neutrality. What do you mean by that and why?
I am quite annoyed by years of hearing that we can't do this and we can't do that because we need technology neutrality, and there is a fundamental underlying belief that the market would solve all the problems that we have and it would relieve policymakers from taking hard decisions. You can see what's happening if you follow that mantra, because now we are in a situation in many countries where the change that is necessary is so significant that the end user, the population, doesn't want to follow. They find it too hard on them, too much of a burden. I'm living in a 70-year-old house. I'm 70 years old also. I do not want to invest in a new heating system. All the dirt, all the insecurity, does it even work? You read in the newspaper, it's not fit for purpose. I don't have underfloor heating. You know, there's a lot of misinformation. And that is, in a way, also transported by the idea that we do not take decisions. And that's why we say we want technology clarity. There's dozens of studies that say heat pumps have multiple benefits for energy and climate targets, for the decarbonizing energy system, and also for society, because they provide employment here in Europe. So why cannot policymakers take that position and say, you know, for heating, we know that heat pump-based solutions always work. A high-ranking manager of the German heating industry recently told me hybrids, they always work. So, you know, you start in new houses with heat pumps only. You continue in other houses with small modifications, energetic renovation. And for those really difficult to modernize buildings, you put a hybrid solution in, put some stage renovation on later, and you decarbonize the building stock in no time. And then the problem really is capacity of the value chain. Do we have enough skills and so on to do that? But the technology is here. And I ask policymakers to take that role and to say, but I can base my decision on facts. And my decision now is we do not need to check other opportunities anymore. We can go in the direction of heat pump-based solutions because of the benefits, because of the proven track record, and because of the need of fast action.
It's obviously important to make heat pumps the most economically attractive technology. How can we do that?
Yeah, let's first stress that point once more. It is indeed most important because at the moment we are seeing in many parts of Europe that governments have signed up to the Paris targets, 1.5 degrees centigrade maximum of global warming. But then you look at the reality in the marketplace and you find subsidies for fossil fuels, you find taxation levels that burden electricity more than oil and gas. You sometimes find even information campaigns that still allow the use of oil and gas, and you find a big hesitation to create a different incentive scheme. So you could even say the market reality is a bit toxic against clean and green solutions. And hence, I came across that when one of the counter arguments against heat pumps was always, it's too expensive, you know, it's too expensive and poor people can't afford that. And then you ask yourself, but if you let a poor person live in their uncomfortable house, leaky house, drafty house, and then you say, the only thing that you need to do is just put a hydrogen boiler in there and then that will fix everything. You will still leave them with a drafty house and an uncomfortable indoor environmental quality. Whereas if you would say, okay, now we create a situation in which the investment that you have to take anyways when you replace your boiler is also economically interesting, then you take away the burden from the end user to take that decision and take away the burden from the end user to say, do I want a new kitchen or go on holidays or put money in my retirement plan instead of investing in my new heating system? Because then they would say, well, you know, investing in my new heating system and investing in better windows or investing in a bit of insulation, investing, putting some cavity insulation in, that makes absolute sense. So I can take a loan today while I'm still working, and then I benefit from lower operations costs in the future. How do I do that? One thing is this loan, because the difference between the investment in a heat pump and a gas boiler is probably too high for the moment, maybe even for the foreseeable future, so that this will not be resolved by economies of scale. But the most important thing is that the operations costs go down. And there we talk about the spark spread, and the spark spread needs to be significantly lower than the efficiency of the heat pump. The spark spread is the relation between the cost of energy, of electricity, and the cost of the counterfactual, in this often gas, could also be coal. If this value is around 2 and you have a heat pump with an efficiency of 3 to 4, then you can save 50% of your heating costs. And that is seen by people as attractive. Then, of course, we need these subsidies for the investment. And I guess we also need to create trust in the end user by one-stop shops, helping them to take a proper decision, giving them advice that makes that decision for them a reliable one that will promise and deliver the quality and comfort they envision.
Well, thank you, Thomas, for your time today and your contribution to the OEF. I'm now joined by Michael Taylor, Senior Energy Analyst at the International Renewable Energy Agency, IRENA, who authored the chapter Heat Pump Technologies in the European Building Sector, Applications, Markets and Costs. So, Michael, if I may start by asking about IRENA's 2022 World Energy Transition Outlook that sets a pathway to achieve Paris Agreement goals. Can you share some of the options you considered?
Absolutely. Thanks, David, for being here and give us the opportunity to discuss IRENA's analysis. So in the World Energy Transition Outlook that we released last year and we're in the process of updating, We essentially looked at how to a technically feasible and economically possible pathway to keep the Paris Agreement goals in play. So depending on where we actually pitch up, somewhere under 2 degrees of warming. And the analysis identifies essentially 6 major opportunities to get us onto that pathway. Around a quarter of the emissions reductions are from the direct use of renewables in power generation or, say, solar thermal in end uses. Energy efficiency, around a quarter as well. 20% from electrification. So this is where, if you like, heat pumps come into play. But essentially, as most of your listeners are probably aware, if we're going to reach the Paris Agreement goals sooner rather than later, we need to address the end-use sectors. And there's a particular focus there on scaling up the direct use of renewables where possible. So in buildings, we're talking about solar thermal. In many parts of the rural communities, we'll also be talking about biomass use, hopefully in a more sustainable manner with cleaner combustion to reduce emissions and particulates. And heat pumps. Heat pumps are interesting, of course, because they're actually contributing on the renewable side and the efficiency side. So for those in the realm of trying to figure out decomposing the reductions into different elements, heat pumps are a conundrum because they're contributing on the renewable side by extracting ambient energy and using that very efficiently compared to a fossil fuel-fired boiler, for instance. So there's a lot going on and there's a lot of effort that needs to be required to be scaled up and accelerated, because even though we may be mostly tracking well on solar PV and onshore wind and the power generation sector, which decarbonizing the power sector is a prerequisite for maximizing the benefits of heat pumps. So there's a lot of work to be done, and the end-use sectors need to be a particular focus.
One of the points you raised, Michael, was about the efficiency of heat pumps. Perhaps you can share with us, you know, what are the key factors that determine that efficiency?
Yeah, so to simplify, I mean, heat pumps are extracting ambient energy and using a compression cycle, a compression expansion cycle, extracting that. And so the key thing for the heat pump to maximize the efficiency is to minimize the temperature difference between your source, whether that be the ambient air, a ground loop, or even a water source if you happen to be next to a lake or a pond or something like that, and the temperature, outlet temperature you require. So that's the key thing. And in buildings, that means we need to pay particular attention around the design and installation, in particular of the heat pump, but also look at how we can minimize that temperature lift, which we're talking about. And so in that respect, in an ideal world, you have very large surface area to disseminate the heat. So traditional radiators may be undersized in that respect because they're relying on very high flow temperatures from a boiler. But underfloor heating gives you an advantage because you've got a larger area to disperse at a lower temperature more constantly. So in the past, it was often considered a bit of a prerequisite to have a renovation or perhaps an extensive replacement of traditional radiators. And that's not always the case now. So the technology has progressed significantly. Sometimes you can get away with modifying the existing heat distribution system rather at relatively low cost. And we're seeing now higher temperature heat pumps working very efficiently, even at very low temperatures. So the situation has changed a little bit from the perceived wisdom that people may have had in that respect, and it changes a little bit about some of our policy priorities as a result, we think.
So, Michael, you know, what about costs? You know, are heat pump installation costs falling, and are economies of scale important in reducing costs?
Unlike perhaps for the power generation sector, where there's concentration of actors and some scale, it's very difficult to actually get reliable data on heat pumps. And so we did a very large exercise to collect data from our member states and bring to light in one place what we think is quite a rich data set. It's very patchy, and the data, unfortunately, in terms of the boundary conditions and its descriptive statistics, vary quite a lot. So it's difficult to make direct comparisons, but what we do tend to see is a reduction in costs through time in most of the markets where we're able to collect data. So we're talking about Germany, Italy, France, the United Kingdom. It's in some cases not particularly strong. So what is happening here is that through time and in some of these markets, what we've seen is that installers have become more comfortable or more accurate in their analysis of the building system. And so we've seen the average size of the systems drop a little bit. And so obviously with the economies of scale at the installation level, that means that we're kind of going back up the curve in terms of the specific cost, the cost per kilowatt. So there's a couple of dynamics at play there. What we're seeing now, though, of course, with the fossil fuel price crisis of the last year, is what we're hopefully seeing is that the actual market itself is moving from a more value-based market to a volume-based one. So we'll start to see more economies of scale at the manufacturing side, which is where we're going to see the greater cost reductions come from. And that brings us, into the more difficult areas of cost reduction around installation and so on. So there's because of the importance, as I mentioned, of getting the installation right to ensure an efficient operation and minimize the temperature lift, that starts to become quite crucial for the cost of service, cost of heat to the individual household or commercial building as well.
So, Michael, let's finish up by kind of looking at the future. What are the challenges for greater investment in heat pumps then?
So part of the challenge is really the scale and the difficulty of integrating this in a more holistic way into our decarbonisation pathway for buildings, in fact, or indeed in industry if we start to talk about, low temperature heat in industry. So previously, as I mentioned, there was this, presumption that we would have to do a lot of renovation with the heat pumps to make it work. And I think this, as I said, the technology has not only changed, but our understanding of the process required to get an efficient working heat pump has also changed. And so now it starts to look like we need to go much harder on the heat pumps and indeed solar thermal and other options, not forgetting renovation, but the timelines for the renovation scale up are going to be longer. So what does that mean? We need to scale up manufacturing production. And so that is happening. We've seen the manufacturers in response to the fossil fuel price crisis do that. So that's heading in the right direction. It'll need to go further and faster than even they think. And the second thing is building up actually on the installer side and, if you like, and the sales side, the actual capability and the quality of the people involved. So we have a big workforce issue here that needs to be addressed in terms of scaling up these small, often family businesses, to be able to take on new installers and train them up so that they can deliver a quality install. And so that requires a lot of work around market and regulatory issues, but also support to industry to give them confidence that the market's there, that they'll invest in their workforce. But I think that it's looking in many ways as if the workforce is going to be the key bottleneck in the next few years.
Well, thank you, Michael, so much for your time today and also, of course, your contribution to the OEF. In this podcast with Katja Cruitt, Senior Researcher, Built Energy at CE Delft, we're going to discuss her article, Decarbonising the Dutch Building Sector, that reviews some of the policy instruments used in the Dutch heat transition programme in a country that's making considerable efforts to move away from gas for heating. Now, Katja, to help our audience understand the complexity of the task, can you perhaps give us a brief overview of the heating sector in the Netherlands?
Thank you, David. Of course. Well, The Netherlands has about 8 million residential buildings, and 90% of which currently use natural gas for heating as well as cooking. But in order to meet the climate goals, it's necessary to phase out the use of natural gas and to implement new heating and cooking systems powered by renewable energy sources. One thing that makes that difficult is that we need to change our infrastructure for existing buildings. For example, we need to use reinforce electricity grids or develop new district heating infrastructure. So as well as change the way the heating technology works in the building. So it's both a challenge for, you know, on the individual building level as for the infrastructure. And additionally, of course, like most European countries, there's a mix of rental buildings and privately owned buildings. So there's just many levels on which this heat transition needs to take place.
So what is the government doing to decarbonize the heating sector in buildings? And would you say it's going well? And also, do you think the country's on the right track?
Yes, well, the government in the past years has been significantly increasing its efforts on decarbonization, not only in buildings, but all sectors. Following the Paris Climate Agreement, there was a Dutch climate agreement that was developed in 2019 between the government and private sectors. Since then, there's really been a lot of effort focused on also decarbonization of buildings. So, for example, there's a regulation to enforce gas-free heating for new construction. So at least the new buildings are heated with sustainable energy sources. There are some other regulatory instruments like energy performance requirements for some subsectors like office buildings and social housing with housing associations. But there are not yet any energy performance requirements really for residential buildings. There are also some financial instruments like energy taxes and energy taxes for gas specifically. And there's some rebalancing taking place to reduce energy tax on electricity so that there's some incentive to move away from gas and move towards electric heating. Also there's subsidies and loans for insulation and sustainable heating so that individual homeowners can take those steps. Finally, there's a huge effort to organize this district-oriented approach. So municipalities were put in the lead to develop local heating plans to realize kind of a neighborhood-based approach for new heating. So to do research and give clarity into what alternatives for gas are neighborhood by neighborhood. So it's clear that there's not one single solution that fits all, but there's really plans being developed based on the local characteristics of the buildings and of the neighborhood. Last year, the new government coalition also announced some additional policy measures, such as minimum energy performance standards for rental homes as of 2030, also energy performance standards for heating appliances, which is interesting because that would mean that we will start to phase out standalone gas boilers by 2026, or that's when the phase out would start. And finally, a blending obligation for gas fuel to increase the amount of renewable biogas in the gas mix. So there's a mix of policy instruments. But I think actually when we look at what's really happening and is this working, the strongest measure that's really leading to energy efficiency and a reduction of gas use in the built environment is actually the high gas prices, which we're seeing everywhere. So there's a steady reduction of energy use, but most of it, we still suspect that most of that is due to actually the high gas prices, and really deep renovation is not yet at the necessary pace. So there's definitely still work to do. Only 4% of Dutch homes are heated with electric heat pumps or full electric. So there's definitely still a large path to go.
Yes, certainly in Europe during the COVID period and also the period of high prices, we've seen a reduction not only in energy use, but of course, a reduction of emissions. So we now have to translate that into the future energy transition within Europe. Well, look, let me ask you one last question, Katja, if I may. You know, what in your view are the remaining key challenges and how should or could they be addressed?
Yeah, David, that's a really good question. Generally speaking, when you look at the policy for the heat transition, we see a trend that moves kind of from voluntary measures such as subsidies, the pricing of energy through energy taxes, towards stronger and regulatory instruments that are really needed to get everyone on board and make sure that that no one also falls behind. And there are there are three things that I think for the Dutch Dutch policy landscape still need to be figured out. And one is really set up standards for privately owned homes and make sure that all private homeowners are in the end know what insulation levels are needed and what the energy performance level is needed. So that's one. And the second is to finally make sure that all the heating fuels are decarbonized. So, for example, a carbon cap for heating fuel, and perhaps the expansion of the European ETS will be a way to also make sure that all the heating fuels are replaced by renewable energy. And then the third challenge for the Dutch heating transition is to make sure that that also on the neighborhood level that collective energy systems are realized, which means that district heating is given a chance. It's very difficult to organize collective heating, so district energy heating. So that's still a big challenge. And I think all these challenges are being tackled in the Netherlands. We're going to see how fast we were able to scale up the heat transition.
Well, Katja, thank you so much. And indeed, thank you to all our interviewees today for your contributions. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast that builds on the Oxford Energy Forum publication, Decarbonizing Heat in the European Building Sector, Options, Progress and Challenges, that was published by the Institute in February 2023. I hope you've enjoyed listening to this podcast. Thank you and goodbye to everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our original research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.